Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. We've got the Titans schedule release. We've got some 2003 divisional round playoff games.
That's playing right.
This team. Oh, we're going back down memory lane right now.
Going down memory lane. And, of course, we've got OTAs starting tomorrow. Joining us now to break all of it down is TD Teron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. TD, appreciate you for joining us today. Before we get into, you know, some of the expectations for the Tennessee Titans, we've kind of been going over that over the last hour. Haven't been able to talk with you since the Titans schedule was released. What do you think about it? What stands out to you about the Titans 2024 schedule?
It's a pretty cool schedule. Got the early bye, I think. That Dolphins game, week four, the only primetime one, that's a key game. Then you look at the four out of the five last games are going to be AFC South divisional games. So it's one of those things where it's kind of a roller coaster, but if they could just kind of slow and steady go through the schedule, I think they'll be all right. I think eight to nine wins is where I would put them.
Okay. Interesting that you bring that up, because we were talking about that in the last segment when D-Mace's point was, and correct me if I'm wrong, D-Mace, the moves that the Titans have made in the offseason, those aren't win six games, seven games, and be okay with it kind of moves. You don't trade for L'Jarius Sneed. You don't sign Calvin Ridley. You don't sign Lloyd Cushenberry just to be, you know, below average to bat. So, you know, when you say 8 to 9 wins, what gives you... What would give you optimism that 8 to 9 wins is a fair projection for this team?
Well, I mean, just going through the schedule and kind of going game by game. Now, obviously, it's super early, but yeah. To me, it's the defense. I think that defense is going to be outstanding. And I really like the vibe that Denard Wilson seems to have brought to the building. I enjoyed talking to the coaches, you know, Tracy Rocker, Steven Jackson. Obviously, Chris Harris was already there. You look at, you know, some of the other defensive coaches, you know, Coach Lou Locus. I think it's a really good foundation for something to start. And then you look at the additions, that secondary has been revived. And I think Chidobe Awuzie and L'Jarius Sneed, like, that's room for excitement, right? And the addition of Tavondre Sweat, that's something to be excited about. And Kenneth Murray and Cedric Gray, I think there's a lot to be excited about on the defense.
We're talking to Teron Davenport. Teron, what other areas do you think this team needs to upgrade at? Because I look at what they've done in the offseason, and you know, Caroline was right. The moves that they made, I don't think those were moves to win six or seven games. I think those were moves to put yourself in a position to make the playoffs. Now, what they do when they get the playoffs is a different story. But I think the moves that they made was to put themselves in a position to get into the playoffs. But what other moves you think they need to make before this season gets started, in August?
Well, I think they'll need to look at some depth at the safety position. You know, a lot of people have expressed concern about that position. I think Elijah Molden and Imani Hooker, when healthy, I think they do the job well. I think, you know, that's a pretty solid safety tandem, but the problem is they've both dealt with injuries throughout their career, so you do need to get depth there. I think that's the main position. Everything else, I mean, look, could they use a veteran linebacker? Yeah, of course. You know, could they use help on the defensive line? Sure. Especially at that outside linebacker position or edge position. You know, somebody like a Carl Lawson could be a good addition there. So I think those are the two things that they could use upgrades with.
Now, I know you've spoken with Brian, and I think the you know, what fans are looking for or what they think will happen is this team will automatically become a pass first team. Did you get that sense from Brian? Yeah, from Brian, because the way I look at it is, yes, you're adding these, you know, three individuals, you know, to your roster, meaning the receivers, Ridley, D-Hop from last year, and now Tyler Boyd. But you also added in, you know, Pollock in the backfield, and you have, well, Pollard in the backfield, and you have Tajay Spears. I don't think automatically this is going to make you a pass-heavy team. They still have to be able to run the football and run it effectively. It just may look different from what it has been the last, what, eight seasons or nine seasons Derrick Henry's been here.
Yeah, it's not going to be run first, but the running game is still going to be incorporated with it. Those Bengals offenses, they were physical. Mm-hmm. They ran the football. You know, you look at Joe Mixon, you know, he had a 1,300-1,300-yard rushing season under Brian Callahan and Zach Taylor there in Cincinnati. So, and he goes back to the opening press conference when Brian Callahan, I asked him straight up, you know, about that balance, you know, and he said, don't get it twisted. You know, when it's time to run the football, they're going to run the football. And I think it's a testament to him just recognizing the physical nature that this organization has been built upon, right? You know, going back to Earl Campbell, all the way to, you know, Chris Johnson, not physical, but still running the football and picking up yards. And then, you know, you got Eddie George and obviously Derrick Henry. There's a history of the rushing game being a significant part of the offense. Brian Callahan recognizes that, and he plans to continue that. But I think it's just going to be a bit easier to run the football because they're going to face a lot more light boxes and things like that because of more 11 personnel and more passing the football. It'll probably be more like a 60-40 type of, relation as opposed to, okay, go out, establish the run, and then pass.
I think that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, I think every game will dictate whether they run heavy or they pass heavy, right. I believe. But you can't leave out Lindale White either. You know, he had a really good season before Chris Johnson got there. I think he had over 1,000 yards, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. The year before Chris Johnson was there, he had 300 carries.
Absolutely. So we got to throw Lindale in there.
He didn't have a huge year, but he had a good year. He was a good workhorse.
He scored a lot of touchdowns one season, too. He had a high touchdown total.
Very high. That was, I think, the thunder and light. Is that what they called it?
What
was Smash and Dash?
Smash and Dash. Thank you, Nick. Thank you. My mind is going. It hasn't been that long. I should remember.
It's still
that.
From the other day. You're still recouping from the other day. Don't worry about it, Willie.
Yeah, I had a heavy weekend. Graduation. It got to me.
Advil, Powerade, Buffalo Chicken Wraps. That's the trifecta.
But, Teron, I think that's a central question, is what the run-pass distribution ends up being. And like D-May says, you get behind in games. Mm-hmm. If that happens several times, that's probably not good. You have to throw it more than you kind of want to. But I'm curious because you used to hear this all the time when they had Mariota. And even Tannehill, to a degree, ideally, you don't want to have to throw it with guys like that more than 25 or 30 times, right? It's not a throw 40 times kind of offense. But could this offense get to that? And is Levis ready for that? Because that's a lot of dropbacks.
Yeah, I think Levis is definitely ready for that. I think he's very capable of excelling, and I think he could be a high-volume passer. They just got to get him to understand, take what the defense gives you at times, you know, and check it down. And he started to understand that. And I think having, you know, Bo Hardigree and Nick Holtz and Brian Callahan there working with him, I think that's going to be really good for him and help him get there. The other thing is the offensive line, right? And this offensive line is going to be important as far as protecting him and being able to, you know, have those lengthy 10 to 15 yard developing routes. You know what I mean? The 5 and 7 step drop passing plays and those types of things. You got to have the protection for that. So I think they've made the investments. I believe J.C. Latham is going to, after a typical rookie start, I think he's going to settle in and be a darn good blocker. And we know what Lloyd Cushenberry brings to the table. I almost called him Zach Martin. Peter Skoronski, I think, is going to really elevate as a left guard as well. So I think they're in good shape there. We'll see what happens on the right side, you know, but that's going to be the area to focus on.
How similar in what you've tried to, assess of the new defense with the new defensive coordinator, how similar is what they're going to ask LeJarius Sneed to do here as it was in Kansas City? That's probably a difficult question to answer, but I'm asking you because you understand it better than I do.
It's not a difficult question. They're going to ask him and demand him to press and be physical at the line of scrimmage. I think it goes back to, okay, you look at Denard Wilson, he's a very aggressive-minded coach. You look at Steve Jackson, and you just look at what they brought in, right? They brought in two guys. That's what they do. Sneed and Awuzie, that's what they do. They cause that chatter. They have conversations with receivers at the line of scrimmage. And I'm getting excited about it because it's something that, you know, it's fun to watch. You want to see that challenge. You get tired of seeing free releases off the ball right into your routes. And then you wonder why, you know, teams convert so many third and longs. Well, okay, it's third and eight. You're 10 yards off the ball. Listen, I'm going to eat because I get a free release and I can run whatever daggone route I want, you know. And that also makes it harder for the guys up front to get to the quarterback. So I think when you look at all those things involved and you look at how Denard Wilson has talked about, you know, those guys on the outside giving the guys up front just an extra tick or two to get to the quarterback and finish the job. That tells you right there, it's going to be physical football. And as a receiver, you know, you just got to going against that secondary. You better strap up and get ready to rock and make sure your releases are right.
I think one of the things to follow this year, I was just reading a really interesting article, and it had to do with the hockey player. It was centered in on some hockey players that did very well to earn a big contract, similar to Sneed, right? But then how they handled the part of when you get paid more, there's more pressure, there's more expectation, and if you don't live up to it, it's harder to live up to the contract, right? Even if you're still the same player, that's what a lot of these players would say. They're like, I was still the same guy. I earned the contract because I was good, but I didn't become a different player after I got the contract. I was just viewed differently. I'm curious how Sneed will handle that part of it, because that's a tough thing.
Well, I think this. If he goes out and plays the way that he's played the last couple of years, anybody who's questioning the contract, I think they might want to take another look. Because over the last couple of years, he proved himself to be a top-five corner in this league. So I don't see how someone can have an issue with that. And here's the thing. If he plays as a top-five corner in this league, by the time the next couple contracts are done, you know, Patrick Surtain and some of the other younger guys, he may not even be a top-10 paid corner. So I don't think that should apply to Legarius Sneed if he plays the way he has. But you are right, you know, guys get a big contract, and then there's a different set of demands and expectations placed upon them, and that's just one of those things. If you want the big deal, you got to be willing to take those on.
Yeah, you do. And I'm sure he will be just fine, you know, because I think he fits the type of defense Denard Wilson wants to play. If you've watched Baltimore, they are aggressive secondary. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, sometimes it bites them in the rear end. But a lot of times, you know, refs allow them to be physical. And that works to their advantage. So I'm hoping that's the same thing here with, you know, both corners, not just Sneed, but both of them. And you can throw in, you know,
McQuarrie.
Yeah, McQuarrie as well. He's a physical guy. So that'll come naturally to him. You know, so I think the only sort of hesitation I have with the secondary is the depth. You know, if one of those guys go down, then who do they look to be the starter? Because it's going to be a war of attrition. And if Sneed or, you know, the other guy goes down, then who do you have replacing them? I know, you know, McQuarrie can come in and be a corner, but how much of a drop off would it be to go from Sneed to McQuarrie or whatnot. So that's my concern, is the depth at that position.
Yeah, and I think the development of Jarvis Brownlee Jr. Mm-hmm. is going to be, you know, interesting. He's a guy that they believe could play on the outside as well as excel as a nickel, so you got that. I'm curious to see, now I haven't seen anything as of yet, but, mm-hmm. you know, William Jackson III, if they sign him, now this is a first-round pick, of course, we're talking about 5 years ago, maybe even longer than that, seven, if they sign him as a depth option, I mean, that's something to look at. I'm not going to say, hey, he's going to be, you know, a significant contributor, but that gives you veteran depth and better depth than what you've had already. So I definitely agree. We'll see how that continues to play out. But, you know, injuries are something they're going to have to avoid. You know what I mean? That's really the bottom line.
We're talking with Jerron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. I'll circle back to a question that Dimas asked you earlier, TD, about depth at certain positions. What about tight end? I know that was one position that Brian Callahan mentioned in his press conference a few weeks ago of, you know, maybe getting more bodies in there, more guys at that position. They haven't done it yet. That's not to say that they won't. Same thing with the safety position, although they haven't addressed it yet. It's not that they won't. Do you think that they will address tight end? And what's maybe the vibe that you've gotten about their feelings toward Josh Wiley and Chig?
Well, they did sign a tight end. They signed Nick Vinette, you know, who was a third-round pick of the Seahawks a few years ago. So they've addressed it in their book as far as adding that veteran. So they have depth there. And then, again, they did sign a couple undrafted free agents. You know, we'll see how those guys work out. But I think, you know, they've put three more bodies in the room. Now, as far as what's available out there and what was before signing Nick Vinette, there wasn't much available. So not sure any other way they could have added to it. I feel as though that's something they did work to address. Now, is it at the level that a lot of people would have wanted? No, of course not.
What do you expect to be the role of the tight end in Brian Callahan's offense?
Well, you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel. I think, you know, actually Tyler Boyd is a guy I would look at as a tight end. Now, obviously not by position, but by concept, right, within the passing game. So I think the role is going to be, you know, you'll see some 12 personnel, I would imagine. I think Chig is a guy that they'll work to create matchups with and try to get him, you know, matched up with a DB that's too small for him or a linebacker that's too slow. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the way it works. And we'll see. We'll see. That's the whole mystery of how this is coming out. And that's why it's so exciting to get around these guys and see more and more of what they're going to do.
Whole lot of mystery surrounding this team in the offseason. TD, we've got OTAs starting tomorrow. What are some things that you are going to be looking for? And I understand it's just, you know, one day of OTAs, but maybe what are some things that fans can be looking for as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think seeing Calvin Ridley in action, you know, for the first time. I've been told that all he does is set the tone for things there. So definitely looking forward to seeing that. Want to see, you know, Jeffrey Simmons and Sweat, you know, see their interaction and how things work there. I mean, look, overall, it's just exciting. I was talking to Jim Wyatt today, you know, being over there at the Titans house where they're, you know, previewing the new stadium options. And, man, it's just exciting to be back, you know, in the mix. You know, that's really overall. I can't tell you a particular thing because I'm just excited about everything with it.
With so many questions and mystery, so to speak, this offseason, it'll be fun to start kind of peeling back the curtain a little bit of what this team might look like. Obviously, it's early. Obviously, there's only so much that you can learn, but at least getting a first look at some of these guys, like you mentioned, Calvin Ridley included, in a Titans uniform is going to be interesting to see. But you mentioned you were at the Titans house today. Could you give us a little bit of a recap? What stuck out to you? What's looking nice with the new stadium?
Yeah, wow, they set it up really, really well. Reggie Polk of Polk & Associates Construction, they're a part of the team that's building the stadium itself, but he and his group, they built this preview. And you go in, and the first thing you see is, like, this beautiful replica of the stadium, and the detail is unbelievable. It's 6 by 8 feet. It has detail all the way down to the scoreboard. The cars on the outside of it, the lights are lit. Like, it's crazy. It's said to be the most detailed replica of a stadium in the country. So you have that just to really get a feel for the stadium. Then they have a nice preview where, you know, you walk in the room and it's kind of like you're in a suite at the stadium and you get to see, like, the view. They did a great job. Jim Rice, the VP of ticket sales, he took us through it. And Kate Guerrera from the Titans organization. They did a great job of just putting it together. And they have a room. It's called the Javon Kearse room. They have rooms where they go to close the deals. You know, you could go in. One's a Javon Kearse theme. Another one is an Eddie George theme. Then they have one with records on the wall and just all significant Titans moments in history. It's it's something I know if I went through that and I was a Titans fan, I'd be like, yeah, sign me up. Let's go ahead and get these tickets rocking. And I asked Jim Rice at the end of it because, you know, trying to think from the perspective of the common fan, you know, what are you guys doing to make sure that the basic fan, the fan by which this organization was built upon, is still included? Because I saw going, you know, Veterans Stadium to Lincoln Financial Field, even, you know, doing 49ers stuff, going from Candlestick to Levi Stadium, the soul was taken out, you know, because the common fan was priced out. And they said that they're going to have 40% of PSL options, you know, under $3,500. So I thought that was really good that they made ways to keep. Now, they're not going to be the best seats. Like, don't get it twisted. But there will be a way to see, get into the stadium. So I think that's really good that they're doing that.
I must be in the front row.
Nope. For $5.
It will not be the Euchre seat, though, exactly. Behind the pole. You won't get that guy.
Yeah.
You're the best, TD. Appreciate you for stopping by.
All right, appreciate you. And let me real quick say, shout out Drew Davenport, graduating from Nashville School of the Arts tonight. I'm proud of her. That's my 18-year-old, my little girl.
All right. All right. Congrats. We got a bunch of graduates around here.
So many graduates around here. A whole lot of proud family members. So congratulations, TD.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, thanks, TD.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.